My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
We have Warren Bernard in the house again, man, for a special treat. What we're looking at right here, Warren, these are both pulp magazines.
Yes, they're both pulp magazines, and these are the two issues that contain Jack Kirby in them.
I'm so glad that you brought these over, because we knew that Jack Kirby did some pulp work, and there was that 50th anniversary Abrams book that they did about Marvel Comics. And the image that you would always see when they would talk about Kirby and the pulps, you would see this image, and, you know, and Kirby Collector and all that stuff. It's always this image. And it always made me think, like, okay, well, you know, okay, good. He did work in the pulps, and I guess in pulps, it's like you do a title image, and then it's all text. I go over to Warren's house, man, check out his stuff, and I'm like, there are 100 Kirby illustrations I've never seen before.
We're going to go through both of these. We're going to see every single piece that Simon and Kirby did illustrating pulps.
So what is, to begin... This is 1940.
And this is also 1940. Uncanny Stories, I think, only ran one or two issues.
Okay. So worth noting that this is just before the creation of Captain America.
Right. Exactly. And this is November 1940, so it went on sale was probably somewhere about October or something like that. And Marvel Stories had started, I think, in 38 and ran a couple of issues. Then they kind of revived it. All right. And so this is one of the revival issues. These are the two that people normally don't see, and how about we go through one of them?
Yes.
How about we go through both of them?
Yeah, we got to share that Kirby artwork.
All right, so...
And I'm a fan of Simon and Kirby era. Like, I don't know how you guys feel on the subject.
Oh, I love this stuff. So, if you start here, okay, you can see down here at the bottom, Unusual Gripping Stories...
Yeah, and that's clearly Simon and Kirby.
It's clearly Simon and Kirby. All right. And this is dated April of 41. So this is a little bit later than the Marvel Tales. Yeah, so this came second. All right, so this is about the time because Captain America was, I think, May of 41? Okay. So this is... So about the time they were pulling together Captain America, they were illustrating this pulp. All right. And so, you know, this is a nice little... Just a nice little spot illo down there. Unusual Gripping Stories. So, let's go through, shall we? I did mark them. So here is a nice double page spread.
Nice, man. And he's using textured paper. There is textured paper, like, for this exact job to get these kind of tones. It was called coquille board.
Coquille board, right,
And I think it still exists. Like, you don't see it often in your regular art store, but...
Now,
find it online.
Also, think of how prescient this is. The coming of the giant germs. Okay.
Yeah, Jesus.
Very timely.
So let's find some more.
Very spare illustration.
Yes.
You know, like some of them look more Simon and Kirby-ish than others.
Let me see. Oh, there we go. Okay. Coming of the giant germs. And we'll go. Oh, and here we go. So here's a typical in-house ad for the next issue of Marvel Stories, which did not have Simon and Kirby in it.
And there are pulps like Marvel Tales. And I wonder if Marvel Tales, like the number sequence, like continues into the comics, or if the Marvel Tales comics begin with issue one.
Well, Marvel Mystery was resequenced. Marvel Mystery comics did get resequenced into Marvel Tales.
Okay.
Okay, so in terms of the numbering, yeah.
Right, but then there was a Marvel Tales comic that was a horror comic in the 50s. Is this Simon and Kirby?
Yeah,
as well?
This is Simon and Kirby as well.
So interesting, man. Seeing him just like figure out the superhero stuff. I don't know that he was doing much comic book work at this time. You know, he's doing a cup of coffee at Fleischer Studios. He's trying to sell comic strips.
Didn't he work for Eisner a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, he worked for Eisner a little bit. Now, what's interesting is, and I'm sorry I didn't bring this, but this is also very typical of the kind of illustration you would have seen in Astounding Stories, Amazing, and the mainstream science fiction pulps of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may have talked about this once, but if you look at the equipment that was going on in the pulps in the 1930s, okay, Kirby sat on that until he got to the Baxter Building. All right. All right, so there's that one. So here we have an illustration by Alex Schomburg.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so this is a double page spread by Alex Schomburg, okay, who in another video, they can take a look at Marvel Mystery 39 getting cracked out of its, okay.
The CGC snuff film.
Yeah, the abomination that we performed in front of everybody on the internet. So this is actually... He and his brothers had a commercial illustration company, okay? And he and his brother, August, did a couple of children's books about the United States Army that I should have brought with me.
When I think of Schomburg, I think of, like, technical detail. Draws good machines.
Oh, yeah,
Draws accurate warplanes, et cetera, and so forth.
Well, and you can see that here. I mean, this is a nice rendition of a Stuka.
And the whole design with the lights, spotlights coming from that center point.
I've always been a big Schomburg fan. There's a great book about Schomburg called Chroma, the Art of Alex Schomburg. It came out, I think, 88 or 89 or 86 or something like that. So people who are into Schomburg should go and track that one down. There is a signed edition for the geekheads like me, and yes, I have one.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, Alex Schomburg. Illustration. Let's see who else we can scare up here. Because there weren't that many illustrations in this one. Here we go. Here's another Simon and Kirby. You can see it in the faces.
Yeah. More traditional pen and ink style here.
Yeah. Meet my brother, Mr. Ghost.
And when the word pulp is used, man, you can see just like...
It's on shitty paper.
Shitty paper. Yeah, the ink adheres bad. You can't do much in terms of hatching.
And also they put these they overprinted the size of the covers, and so a lot of them fray.
And then the signatures are all different sizes. You know, it's not a clean,
right?
You know, edge.
So and then are there any more in here? Oh, I guess we missed one.
Is that deckled?
Oh, I don't know.
Edges are that way. First printings of books sometimes will be done that way.
Paging crisp.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, that's dope.
That's a great shot. Great composition.
And you know, that's a...
Yes. Simon Kirby face.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
From that time frame, yeah. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But it also shows them working in a very different style than what they had to use in the comic books. Okay? Because this is not just pen and ink.
Right, yeah. More of that coquille.
Right.
Texture, but like as I look at it, you could get a very smooth texture with like a black color pencil on that coquille board. But they also had varieties of like duotone board that would work in this way. And duotone definitely existed because in that very first Marvel Comics story that Bill Everett did, Submariner, he uses duotone. So the technology existed, and this may be an application of that.
Well, unfortunately, no one has any idea where any of these originals are. They're most probably gone.
Yeah, that stuff was used as cutting boards and insulation. Right. And like, if Martin Goodman ain't respecting, you know, the comic pages that the first Marvel comics are drawn on, like, these were diarrhea to him, toilet paper.
And by the way, just to show you how old this is. So this is supposed to be in the future, right? It says, speed will be my bride. The fastest woman on Earth might imaginably make a good housekeeper, but not the fastest horse. Catch this. The Olympics for 1980 were over. Okay. All right. This is really old. Okay. All right. So that's it for Simon and Kirby in Amazing. I don't think there was any. Yeah, there was no more.
Good ads.
And there were no in-house ads in this particular one. But let's take a look at the first one they did. Marvel Stories for November of 1940. So this is all science fiction. This was more... The Uncanny Tales was more
weird
fantasy mystery type thing, okay? So, but in this one, down here at the bottom, it says, Inside Cover Illustrations by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby.
So he solidified the name. Jack Kirby is now my name.
Right.
He tried a lot of nom de plumes.
And this is a particularly nice copy. You can see the condition of the paper. Okay, is actually in really nice shape. So here we go. This is the one where Ed was... there's still Ed drool on this that I haven't been able to get out of it. Here we go.
Look at this stuff.
Yeah, that's strong. Wow. All
right. This is... like I said, he was really reading the science fiction magazines of the 1930s.
Right.
Okay.
Great lettering.
He was also, by the way, reading Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers.
The illustration style feels like it would be totally at home in like a Charlton. You know, mm-hmm. like there's comic book style that would look like this.
Yeah.
Even the Ditko 50s work.
I really enjoy seeing his hatching. Yeah. You know, like knowing, I guess, that this is done for one color, for black and white, as the finished piece, it does look like a different approach to the finish than right. what we would see in the comics.
Yeah, but this is one of the pages that you don't see reprinted, okay?
You don't see almost any of this stuff. Just that one robot is the thing that they always use.
Which is a shame, because I would have chosen this. But that's just me. All right, we've got more. And there's the robot.
And that's a mixture of hatching and the coquille mm-hmm. texture.
All right.
And look at the floral textures on the ground.
Yeah, right there.
It's a nice contrast with the robot.
Right. Right.
Yeah, nope. It's amazing, man. It's like a total still life.
And it's much nicer seeing it printed this way than the third generation reproductions that they would. And I never understood that, because it's not like, well, this is a sort of a rare book. It's not that difficult to get. But to think that, you know, all they could do is just keep reproducing the same piece of trash they've had for the last, you know, 30 years is just beyond me. That, you know, digital cameras now, I can take a digital picture. This would be 10 times better.
Yeah.
So, all right, there's more.
It's fun stuff, man.
Why were monsters bent on only attacking Ruth and him? So here are all these monsters, okay? They're in the middle of, I don't know, Broadway or something like that.
Everybody's living their best lives, but right. Harold and Maude or whatever their names are.
Ruth and him, whoever him was.
Hey, man, this could be the first appearance of him from Fantastic Four, Adam Warlock.
So, but yeah, there's a Kirby face. Right there.
Very much. But he's still figuring stuff out. Like,
sure.
Like, look at that arm pointing. It's very rigid.
Yeah. Well, you know, it took him time. It takes anybody time.
Yeah.
All right, so more. There's another double page spread you don't see, which I really like.
Another nice title lettering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And they hand lettered that. This most probably wasn't hand lettered.
Right.
Yeah, the two-page spreads, I'm amazed at the complexity they go for in these two-page spreads.
And by the way, these two-page spreads here are more complex than what you would normally see in Astounding or Amazing magazines of that day.
Who would Virgil Finlay do art for?
At this time, well, Famous Fantastic Mysteries, I think, was later. Oh, he was in Weird Tales at this point?
Okay.
Oh, did I miss one? Wait a minute. Oh, here we go. Yeah, this is what I want to show everybody. So down here at the bottom, here are the most thrilling discoveries in science, the realm of fiction, the Human Torch, the Submariner, Electro, the Vision, fully illustrated in color in every issue of Marvel Comics. Now, this is November of 1940, so this would have been about the time of, I guess, Marvel Comics number 8 or something like that. I mean, really, really early, okay?
Yeah, certainly single digits.
Right.
Enough issues came out for them to slough off Kazor and say, like, he's no longer in our stuff. But, you know, the narrative retrospectively that a lot of people, you know, maybe even to a certain extent myself, when you look back on the history of comics, you think there are the pulps and then comics come. And you don't ever associate the two, but they existed in tandem for quite a while.
And I've got some other examples that we'll look at in a few minutes, that a bunch of these publishers, Goodman being one of them, had both pulps and a line of pulps and a line of comic books.
Right.
Okay. And so at least early on, there was this cross-pollination from the pulps to the comic book, but not vice versa.
Right.
Okay. So you wouldn't see advertisements for the pulps in the comic books, but you, as you can see here, it does go the other way.
was too adult, man. These stories are too adult for young minds.
This is a nice double page spread. I mean, they did put some work into this, so.
All right. It seems like they really strive to create depth as well. You see a right. lot of characters on different planes.
Yeah. They did a good job. Here's another one.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's neat. You can see that structure that is the Kirby, you know, that structure under the character's face. It's almost the finishing that varies from, you know, as you go through these illustrations.
Right.
Yeah, and that's like, yeah, that's Rain. And that's the Joe Simon part of the puzzle, I guess, man, because, like, you associate that finishing, like, with that era, Boy Commandos.
Right. Yeah, sure.
You know, Sandman.
Right.
I do love the hatching, and I'll point out the variation. Like, you know, you look at the chest, the black squares on the chessboard, and you can see, like, there's almost a light source in the middle, you know, that gets darker as you get away from kind of this middle range. Really subtle.
And this is so early in Kirby's career. Like, he's going to see this come back from the printer and adjust his art style accordingly, knowing the sort of limits of the print technology at the time.
Right.
This is a great illustration, too, just as a fun illustration, right, of the chess is metaphor for war, and the chessboard in the foreground with the big guy behind it. Really fun.
Yep, that was a fun one. All right, so
yes.
Talking about comic books and pulps, if you want, this is the best example I've ever seen. Check this out. So here we've got Marvel Comics presents a short picture story featuring the Human Torch.
Yeah, man, so just to illustrate that Marvel... You know, what becomes Marvel Comics is up and running. And I wonder if this might be, you know, Jack Kirby's first works at the Goodman offices.
Yeah, I don't know who did this. This to me is not Simon Kirby.
No, it's definitely not. And that's probably Burgos. I would say that's Carl Burgos.
Right. You know, this is great. Things have been pretty quiet. Do you think, Captain, that Submariner will keep his promise and not disturb the peace again? I believe so, Torch. Submariner is a man of his word. I'm sure he won't cause trouble anymore.
Okay. So we know that Marvel Comics 5 exists, at least,
right.
because that was the crossover comic.
Right.
So now, knowing that Human Torch knows who Submariner is, we know at least 5 issues of Marvel Comics came out at this point.
Right. Okay.
What a document.
Yeah, this is great. Wait, this radar signal coming.
This thing is freaking scary looking, man. Like, yeah. I thought that was like a oddity of medicine or something.
Well, this is nice. It says, yes, there is plenty of good, clean reading and loads of thrills in every issue of Marvel Comics, and it costs only 10 cents everywhere. So this is the best crossover piece of comics into pulps that I've seen. Another reason to have this particular one.
Yeah.
And I don't think there were... Let me see. Was there anything else... I may have missed one.
Looks like there's one more.
There's one pull tab, but
oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
One last.
A Kirby Ubermensch.
Yep. Ah, Captain America.
Yeah.
If momentary exposure to the cosmic rays beyond the Heaviside layer, whatever that might be, made a Superman of an ordinary mortal, what fabulous titan of strength and intelligence might the human become who'd spend hours under such forces?
Wow, that really is like the blueprint of how many superhero characters.
Oh, yes. Right. So there it is.
Amazing document, man. Thank you very much for bringing this.
So
I was getting caught up in this. Like, is your rupture here?
Oh,
like,
my God.
What's a rupture?
That's terrifying.
Like, what's a rupture?
Just the ads are worth it, okay? If wow. ruptured, try this out.
What the fuck is rupture?
Ruptured is if you tear... I think it's a
hernia. Yeah,
it's
a hernia.
So it'd be like if you're tearing your muscle, your abdomen
right.
muscle
right.
walls, and... Man. I always think the ads tell you a lot about that era and what people are dealing with, and that is just sad.
Look at this. Epilepsy, hypnotism,
Some new dentures.
Yep. Stopping itching. All right. And then this was... Snap was this... sleazy photo magazine.
Like a men's mag.
One step above men's mag, because it was Life magazine size.
They're advertising censored pictures.
Yeah.
So it's like you can almost see something. That's cute, right?
And there it is.
Amazing.
I always associate this kind of a color treatment with some of the Chris Ware Acme.
Yes.
Stuff that he would do.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Even that composition in the front cover, like with the lettering and all of that, like he's used that before.
So, all right. So I also brought some other pulps to show that it wasn't just Goodman that had this. So Street and Smith, okay. So this is The Wizard, Adventures in Moneymaking. This is a sort of a superhero type that defeats criminals with his acumen and business. This is the true Republican superhero.
Cash Gorman.
Cash Gorman, right, exactly. All right. I'm sorry, Cash Gorman. It only ran six issues, which I guess says the Republicans weren't reading this, okay? So Street and Smith, they were the ones who brought you both The Shadow and Doc Savage, precursors to comic books, okay? As we saw in when you came to my house, Doc Savage, October 1938, is the Fortress of Solitude. Okay, so you can't really get to comic books without some of the stuff that Street and Smith put out. They also put out Astounding Magazine, which for its day and well into the 60s was the most erudite and adult and intelligent of the science fiction magazines of the day. All right? So in here...
That dude looks totally like a David Icke lizard person. Right? Even the green highlight for that second cut, that double lighting, is very lizard-like.
Look at this. He's flipping a coin. Heads I win, tails you lose, okay?
I almost thought that was a rupture.
And here we have an ad for Doc Savage Comics on sale everywhere. And a couple of pages in. Here we go. An ad for the Shadow Comics.
I wonder what these fellows would think, man, if years later, like, they would be selling these properties off to Jack Liebowitz's company.
Oh, geez. Oh, here's another one for Shadow Comics.
Yeah.
So this was Street and Smith. I love these patriotic ads in the back. This one was, you know, I forgot who this publisher was. Was this Better? Yeah, so this is Thrilling Publications. So... Thrilling Publications had Thrilling Comics. They also had America's Best Comics. And Schomburg did a bunch of covers for them.
Right.
He also worked for the pulp side, too, in the 1930s into the 1940s. So in here, we see here's Real Life Comics. Let me stick that up there. There we go. Approved by parents and teachers.
And that is not Denny Ihorn.
And then Ihorn. Here, I found this, which I was surprised to find out. This is a Dr. Seuss War Bond ad using, shall we say, not exactly politically correct way of... Wipe that sneer off his face.
You just are responsible for getting Dr. Seuss canceled.
All right, so there's that one. Yeah, I got those. And then this was also from the same publisher. All right, and this is Air War, Captain Danger. In fact, in comic books, starting in, I think it was late 39, was the first cover of a comic book that showed American superheroes battling the Nazis. Okay? And up until December of 41, comic books actually had a lot of covers. This is from summer of 1940 or 41? Let me see. Volume number one. So this is summer of 1941 before we get into the war. And this is an American going to fight with the British. Wings comic books. I don't know if you've ever seen Wings comics. It started in 1940. It came about because of the Battle of Britain. Okay, the Battle of Britain came out. They came out with Wings comics. And like the first year and a half or so, Americans were in that comic book fighting with the British. Okay, so what do we got in here? This one. Here we go.
Oh, there it is, man.
There is the Black Terror. And Exciting Comics, and like I said, was it All American? Yeah, it was All American Comics, Exciting Comics, and a couple of the Thrilling Comics. Schomburg did a lot of these covers for this magazine.
I always liked that character, and he had like a sidekick with the same skull and bones.
Right. I'm sorry, the skull and bones on the chest. I mean, that is just great. You just knew you didn't want to fuck with this guy. Okay?
Right, but these are the heroes, you know, and that's pretty villainous.
Right. So this is the second best of the ads that I had seen, and especially because I'm a Schomburg fan, that But anyway, so I just wanted to show people that it wasn't just Simon and Kirby going over and drawing pulps. It was also the publishers themselves owned both pulp lines and comic book lines.
I wondered, do you know if, did Fawcett publish pulps?
Yeah, but they weren't a big publisher of pulps. I'm trying to think of any pulps from Fawcett.
While you think about it, look at how much that's like the comedian's head.
Right.
If you just see that top part with the watch, you know, the watch for Watchmen.
Oh.
And, also, it looks like a G.I. Joe, almost actual size of like those, you know, 4 3/4 inch figures. And this is one of those public domain characters now.
It is, yeah. And I think even Alan Moore put these characters to use in some form or fashion, maybe in his America's Best line.
Right. So anyway, there you have it. So it's not an either or, it's both.
Yes. For a period of time. I mean,
which probably, period, right.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works.
Well, there were things like, for instance, Planet Stories came out for many years as a comic book, and Planet Stories came out for many years as a pulp.
Yeah.
Okay. Startling Stories came out many years as a comic book, and the same thing with the pulp. So they had the two lines. It was like no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
And there are even vestiges, like you go into a Barnes & Noble now, Argosy magazine, some of the little detective magazines and stuff. They come from this era.
Right. All right, here we go. And here is a little ad for Thrilling Comics. With the original Doc Strange.
Right.
Okay. A big dime's worth. And I should have brought it. I have a Thrilling Comics from 1945 with an Alex Schomburg cover of a G.I. coming home. Okay, and being greeted when he comes off the boat coming home. So Schomburg worked at least until 45 for Thrilling. Like I said, he was working for not one, but two major publishers. And that's the Better and Standard Publishers, who had Thrilling Comics and the Black Terror and America's Best. He was also working for Timely. Okay, so, I mean, he was cranking these things out. So one day I want to go and just... No one's ever inventoried what he did, which is actually kind of a shame.
And then, do you know if he had a shop? Like to churn that stuff out, he must have had... Some
it was just him.
Really?
Yeah, it was just him. Okay, so here's one for Startling Comics. And at this time, and Captain Future, all right, at the time had his own pulp, okay, put out by the same publisher. So, and Startling Stories was also coming out as a pulp at the same time. So once again, you get this big crossover.
Interesting to see the Man of Tomorrow.
Exactly, yeah.
Tagline.
Well, someone didn't copyright it, didn't trademark it, and do all that stuff. So, anyway.
Great documents. Jimmy, yes. And I have robust giant comic book collections with exactly zero pulp magazines amongst them. So, what a pleasure to take a look at that Jack Kirby stuff. And these extra pulps that you brought over, great bonuses.
Yeah, it's a nice connection, a nice bridge to that past that we may be familiar with, but don't always see those examples. There's probably less and less crossover now as you know,
yeah,
conventions
right,
become more specialized and things.
Right, so, right.
Good to get that on record.
All right, man, we got more videos to record, so let's get the heck out of here. K-favors, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell icon. We'll notify you when the next videos are available, and... You want to do that so that we mitigate that kayfabe effect, man. You want to get those comics while they're still cheap.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at the links below this video.
All right, Jimmy, you go distract Warren, and then I'll grab the pulp magazines, man. But before that, give them the marching orders.
Read more comics.